Welcome to this meeting of the Finance Audit and Risk Committee on 20th of November. First of all, we will deal with apologies for absence.
Apologies from Councillor McNally, Chairman, and Councillor Harwood.
Chair, I know that, Councillor Sanger is away on business at the moment, so this relates his apology, but my understanding was that Claire, Councillor Billing, was going to come.
I haven't heard from her.
I haven't spoken to her for a few days, so I don't know.
Okay, thank you. Minutes of 21st of September, which are quite substantial. And have them in front of you. Are you content for me to sign those?
Yep.
Thank you. I will do so. I see the size of the report. Notification of the business. I have no notification of received any other business. I just make some announcements, if I can, the usual announcements which we make here, which is members of the public. Thank you, members of the public, for showing up. And the press may use their devices to film and photograph or do a sound recording of the meeting. But please raise your hand to let me know that you are doing this so that I can inform all present. Please do not use flash and disable any beeps or any other sound notifications that may emit from your device. In addition, I've arranged for the sound at this particular meeting to be recorded. Members are also reminded that any declaration of interest in respect of any business set out on the agenda should be declared as either a disclosable pecuniary interest or a declarable interest and required to notify the chairman of the nature of any interest declared at the commencement of the relevant item on the agenda. Members declaring a disclosable pecuniary interest must withdraw from the meeting for the duration of that item. Members declaring a declarable interest, which requires them to leave the room under paragraph 7.4 of the Code of Conduct, can speak on the item, but leave the room before the debate and vote. After that, I'll take a drink. Public participation, we have none. Next item on agenda number 6 is the annual audit letter. And so Ernst & Young K, sorry, we'll just go through the, the audit letter, which should not be very different from what we've seen before.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. We're required to produce an annual audit letter every year by the National Audit Office's Code of Audit Practice, which summarises the results of all the work that we've undertaken. The content of the annual audit letter will be familiar to members of the committee because it went to the previous meeting in the audit results report, and the letter draws extensively on that, and there was no other work that we undertook of a non-audit type that would require reporting in the letter. The executive summary in the report summarises our key findings, including the fact that we gave an unqualified audit opinion on the financial statements for the last financial year, and that we also gave an unqualified value for money conclusion on the council's arrangements for securing value for money. We didn't need to exercise any of our other statutory powers or duties. So from that point of view, it was a good result for the council. I'm quite happy to take any questions from members of the committee if there are any.
Questions, comments, councillors? Content?
Yep.
Thank you, Kay. I think because it is really just following on from the last meeting when you gave us the report on the accounts and saying this is just the formal side of the annual audit letter rather than the report, and therefore serves our purpose adequately. We have item number 7 now, which is Local Government Audit Committee briefing.
Yes, Chair.
Something you produce, I believe, of course.
Yes, we produce a briefing for audit committees on a quarterly basis as an information paper for the different sectors in which we work, which is local government, health, police and fire. The paper is very much for members' information. There are some questions that are on page 32 in the pack, which audit committee members may wish to consider whether they feel they need to raise them with officers. But it just really sort of summarises the areas that are covered in the actual briefing itself. So I'm quite happy to take any questions on the paper.
Thank you for that. I think if you go to page 32, colleagues, you'll see the key questions for the audit committee. And it goes down there and says, does your organisation and its partners have in place IT security, etc., etc.? And it certainly minimises the risk of impact and cyber attacks. I guess these are sort of questions we would ask of officers. And is your culture allowing women progress to senior positions? Well, as I think my comment was, it did until we changed the 151 office and we have a male doing it, but then other sorts in the future when we're putting a female in the position. Commercial activities, of course, colleagues, is one thing which we know that the authority is up to and going to get more and more involved in, and therefore we reserve the right to scrutinise those in the future and see what they're doing and how they're doing. And once we are aware of the detailed plans and the direction of travel for that particular role and responsibility. I think we are assured that financial considerations have been addressed because the audit report tells us most of those things, including appropriate due diligence, stone and straight rules, we know that. We talk again about significant commercial activities, and again, has your authority recently discussed and agreed its risk appetite? I think, yes, certainly, there's a risk management group which sits, which then refers things to us on a regular basis, it did last time. So I think that we have the opportunity to look at the risk, as we will have the opportunity to look at the commercial activities, as will scrutiny, of course, if we go down, or the authority goes down that sort of road. So, any thoughts, questions?
Thanks, Chair. First of all, if I can perhaps just mention sort of page 30, which was the Audit Committee Members' Governance Forum. Councillor Weeks and I both attended the event in London, which we both found really useful. I don't know whether any of the other committee colleagues have the chance of also one in Luton. But we found it, I think, particularly helpful, I think, to understand sort of networking with a lot of other local authorities. A lot of authorities from Hertfordshire actually attended as well. Clearly, one of the key focuses was around commercialisation and what others were doing. But I would certainly commend those fora when they come up again, and perhaps just to ask Kay when the next sort of round of those is going to come up, so I'd certainly be interested in attending again. Just in terms of the key questions, Chairman, I suppose three things really. I guess there is a challenge now for the senior management team in terms of women in senior positions, because there isn't any.
What do you find senior?
I think...
Head of human resources, for example.
I wouldn't say that was necessarily one of the senior positions, but I think... I think that's, you know, I'd be interested to hear your view as to whether you think it is. But I think that would be good, perhaps, on that basis, to define what we regard as being senior positions, and I think that's a fair challenge. I think in terms of commercial activities, I think... Certainly, I will certainly welcome, you know, reports, whether it's to this meeting or to, you know, to overview about what are the things in the pipeline. Certainly, when I attended a sort of recent briefing meeting, I believe there is a paper due to come to Cabinet around potentially around sort of housing companies and so on. But I think it's important to understand. Maybe it'd be good to have some further reports. What is the forward look around commercial activities? Because I think I'm. To be honest, I don't find it is particularly visible at the moment. I think you're absolutely right. There is a lot of work going on. I think it's a question of what stage it's at and what the visibility is, and obviously probably things that could appear in a forward look of things, whether it's for the council, for this committee or elsewhere, of things that are likely to come up and when they are. And Ian will tell me if we think some of these things are in the forward look at the moment for when these sort of papers are likely to come up. But I think that would be helpful, because I think as we move towards the sort of budget setting round, I think it's helpful to understand that what is likely to be happening over the course of the next period. And I don't think it's totally visible at the moment, but I completely accept there is a lot of activity going on. I'm just not quite sure all of what it is and when it's about to appear.
Okay, yeah, as I said, I share sentiments around commercialisation. We need to know more about it. And no doubt we will see more as the administration puts its act together and comes out with something that we can all understand and see. So, yeah, fully support that. As far as women in senior positions, I think we have certainly a record of putting... I use Norm Whiteley, Mrs. Norm Whiteley as a good example of putting in senior positions. That's just put one. And so I don't think we do look... And certainly in my experience, the 15 years I've been involved in it, of looking at and saying, you can't get that job because you're a female. If we did, I'd be very, very surprised and exceptionally disappointed that if that was even thought, let alone part of the culture. So, yes, we do. I like to think we do, but certainly we have to continue to make sure that we are representative of the community in all ways, not just with the female side of life. So I think that's a direction which all authorities and all businesses should be going in. And I like to think that North Arts District Council is going that direction too. Comments, any thoughts?
I suppose just to confirm that head of HR does sit on the senior management team, so I would consider that to be a senior management position. So answer that one. On commercial activities, yes, any reports will go via either this meeting or via open scrutiny to be determined where, and work on housing company business cases is ongoing at the moment, is happening. I think at the next meeting there'll be some SIAS reports on income generation and possibly also commercialisation, sort of as part of their audit updates to reports that have happened over this period. So a chance then to bring up some of these things as well.
We look forward to seeing that. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? There'll be a note. Yeah? Before we move on to eight, Claire, welcome. Please come down this end. Please move down. You seem a long way away. I'd like to be shouting at you. I hate to do that. Apart from that, I'm a little bit mutton, so you might have to shout and scream a little bit.
Okay.
I guess you're sitting in for Deepak.
Yes.
Thank you for doing that. We can put you
right.
In case you forget who you are, we will. I'm glad you could make it.
Sorry, yeah, a few minutes later.
No, that's right. We understand your commitments.
So long way from Oxford.
Especially when the traffic's bad and there's all sorts of things happening on the M25 and such like. So thank you. I'm good. I'm glad that. I was a bit concerned when there were just three of us here, because we were core. And then John came in to great with, and now we have nearly a full team. So the next item on the agenda is item number eight, which is second quarter revenue monitoring, which I guess, Antonio, you're going to have that one in?
Yeah, I read the report. So, as the report title says, this is the second quarter revenue monitoring position as at the end of September 2017. So the headline figures, as per the executive summary and the recommendations, are we're reporting a marginal 131k decrease in spend in this year, with a very minor impact in future years of 13k. In terms of the report itself, most of the numbers to highlight are in the tables. So table one gives you a brief resume of how we got from the budget approved in February to the working budget going into quarter two. Table two then highlights and explains the variances that make up that 131k movement in this year and the 13k in future years. So you can see the big number is against housing benefit overpayments income, 200k extra, or more than we anticipated. This is primarily due to appointing an extra member of staff, which enabled us to process invoices more quickly and clear any that were outstanding. Against this, offsetting this number is the 100k reduction in the expectation on car parking fee income. This 100k was put in terms of the budget setting for this year, and was to come out of the council's parking strategy review, as phase two of that review has not yet been published. We're not now expecting to achieve that additional income in this year, but we do still expect to generate that additional income in 2018-19 and beyond. The rest of table two is more minor. Paragraph 8.3 then gives an update on our progress in delivering the 929k of efficiencies earmarked for this year. We're currently forecasting to underachieve these overall by 115k, and that's primarily due to the parking income efficiency, additional income that I've already mentioned. 8.4 then gives an update on the progress in spending those carry forward budgets that were approved at in the outturn report for 2016-17. Both the changes are further detailed in Table 2, so one relates to the application to extend the Chiltern area of outstanding natural beauty, which we're not expecting to get a decision on anytime soon. They apparently process one application per year, so we've taken it out of the expectation that we'll be able to start work on that in this year. And the other relates to the Economic Development Officer post. The plan is now to have someone in post by December in a shared service arrangement with East Hearts, so we don't need the whole of the 52k carry forward into 17-18. Table 3 gives you an update on the what we call the key corporate financial health indicators. So these are the more significant income streams to the council. You'll see these are all green, except for car parking fees, again, as I've already explained. Moving on to page 38 and table 4, this gives you an update on the overall picture. So you'll see the projected net spend, the minus 131k figure for table 4. And then we've revised slightly the funding figure. It's increased by 17k. This relates to an adjustment to forecast business rates income, and in particular that relating to energy projects hosted within the North Parks District, for which we get to keep 100% of the income generated from those premises. And so any change in the forecast changes the bottom line for the council. And then finally, paragraph 8.12 and table 5 details those risks that have materialised in quarter 2. One is around some of those in table 2, around the lottery and the parking income again, and just a minor one in relation to the cost of legal counsel advice relating to a judicial review. But you can see overall, there's no real concern there in terms of the remaining allowance, 493k, for known financial risks in the rest of the year. So that was all I was going to highlight, Chair. Any questions?
Questions, comments? John?
Can you tell me a bit more about the judicial review?
I know it's in relation to planning services, in relation to planning decision, but I wouldn't be able to give you the particular detail around that.
Perhaps you can do that to all of us then, to send a message around and answer Councillor Bishop's specifically what it was in aid of.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the planning committee, I've never heard it mentioned in the planning committee.
Yep, Simon, then we're going to.
Sorry, am I to believe that we put an application into the Chiltern's Conservative Board in 2013 and we still haven't heard anything, sort of 4 years later? Mm-hmm. I presume somebody's chased them. Mm.
I say so. From my experience, yeah, we would trace them back when I was sitting in there, and so every time came up, said, "Help, yes, if you're right."
I can't believe you can submit an application, nobody's bothered to respond 4 years later. That seems quite stunning. Okay, all right, okay.
Ian, you're waving me next.
Yeah, I suppose there were just a few things I wasn't aware of till sort of seeing the report. I guess the first one was around the economic development officer, but I'd be interested. I mean, certainly I've not seen, and perhaps I've missed it in the correspondence, that the fact we were now having a shared service arrangement with East Hearts on this, that was a new one on me, but I'd be interested to understand the impacts. Effectively, we're only now putting, if you like, half as much into commercial activity or developing some of our, you know, some of this activity, which I assume what this role is going to be doing. I'd be interested to understand what it is now we think that role will do, and what it would have done if we hadn't had a shared service, and why we think that half saving of a post is appropriate. We've obviously had discussions at this meeting before around parking. Again, I guess be interested to know when we think phase 2 is likely to come out, and what the approvals process for that will be. There's again, I suspect it's likely to be a fair amount of consultation necessary. For example, certainly Sunday parking charges were one of the things that were rumoured as to be part of that, which is you would need a consultation. I guess we may have already done this, already changed the terms and conditions of the parking enforcement team around that. But again, if that hasn't, because that would all be part of that process if we did go down to more that wider charging of car parking. So I understand what where that's going. And I guess the final one there is around that North Arts sort of museum, and just again to understand a bit more about what we're doing. But is there general impact this year, Ian, on the budgets with less income than we might have otherwise anticipated from North Arts sort of museum, because the cafe's not open and so on, or Antonio, whichever, either of you really.
Let me take some of those first if I can. First of all, the economic development officer, let's not confuse economic development with commercialisation. The economic development officer, in my opinion, I thought, oh, I have to say, I didn't actually meet him, or her, or it, or whatever it was really for the economic development, not of North Harts District Council, but I would have thought, for North Harts.
Yes.
It was the North Harts, the development of North Hertfordshire for the economic, therefore involved with people like the LEP and those sorts of things. So, perhaps when officers answer, they can take that into account. As far as car parking fees are concerned, I think we'll probably learn more when the budget comes forward. When it should be discussed at the budget rounds. Certainly, it will come, if there are going to be changes this phase two, I would imagine it will come out of the proposals for the 2018-19 budget.
So aside from car park in the income, the proposal is not to change the budget for 18-19, so therefore there's nothing in the budget for next year on that basis, because the budget's already built in from this year's budget. I believe that the car parking strategy is fairly imminent, will be reported to Cabinet initially, followed by consultation, so therefore area committees, etc., and therefore various scrutiny bodies can also get involved. So I'm sure that process will be followed. Economic Development Officer, I'm happy to get an answer from the Head of Service that covers that on the thinking behind it, but I think it is it definitely is the development of North Hertfordshire as a whole, and in terms of liaising with LEP and those kind of things, I think there probably are some efficiencies about one person doing it for two districts rather than doing just one district in terms of the networks and the legislation, etc. So I'm sure that's part of the rationale as to why it can kind of work better as a shared service. And then there's finally a question on Hitchin Town Hall. That's of course at quarter one.
The question was around North Harts Museum.
Sorry, your museum and
mention the cafe. The impact of not having the cafe. That was reported at quarter one in terms of the impact on income from the facility, from not having the cafe open and the reduced footfall.
And this is just the rates, isn't it?
The one that's here is just the rates.
Yes, yeah, just
it's quarter one we're going to be the impact of the cafe.
So we've already put water to that one, Ian, and it's this is the impact on rates which we've gone to VOA, to valuation officers, to just.
Yeah, I just wanted to know a bit more about that, the rates. I don't understand. So they've been rated, and then the North Harts Council thinks it's rated higher, and have asked for an appeal. Is that?
So the Valuation Office agency determined the rateable value of buildings.
Yeah.
They have increased the rates we need to pay, whilst we collect the business rates. We also, for our own properties, have a right to appeal those rates, where it costs us more, which we're going to do. Part of the reason it's gone up is because the museum and the whole facility is newer and therefore has a higher rateable value. They've also split it into multiple parts, and whatever there's a sort of splitting up of a parts of a building, it also leads to a higher rateable value in general. But as it says there, we are going to appeal that because we think it's probably gone up by too much.
And that's, I guess, what any authority, any owner of a property could do.
Yeah.
If the rates, that you can appeal it. And I remember we appealed the rateable values of our leisure services. one time, which we did have significant gains of that a number of years ago. So we, like anybody, will appeal against it, even though we collect it.
But on our behalf,
so to speak, we still have the right for our properties to question the rateable value. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Chloe. So our recommendation is members are able to monitor requests appropriate. We have done that. And also monitored and approved. Content?
Yep.
Thank you. And now we move on to the next one of the trilogy, I guess. Which must be capital, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're going to do this one, I guess, aren't you?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So just to highlight the sort of key numbers from the recommendations. So we are now forecasting net expenditure of 14.52 million this current year, and that is a net increase in the working estimate of 304,000. And that is detailed across the two tables, table 2 and table 3. So picking out the big numbers from each of those is page 43. So on the table 2, the first one relates to John Barker Place. North Hearts Homes are still working on a scheme for John Barker Place, and we're now not expecting that to be until sort of to commence until next year. So any contribution we will make to that scheme will also not be until next year. The other big one from that table relates to property improvements. There's sort of a myriad of factors at play there. We obviously had a wide array of properties, and we have condition surveys done on all of those properties. Those condition surveys will identify a vast range of things that they're doing to them, some of which are short term, and we'll obviously get those fixed as quick as we can, but some of them will be medium to long term, and therefore make a decision about how to prioritise those. Some of those works that may be factored in for this year will include things such as pavilions, community centres, the buildings around Town Lodge in Letchworth, where we're currently our office building. And due to sort of the changing nature about the plans for those buildings, it's prudent, I think, to not do those works yet and to sort of take a step back and review what we've got planned for those buildings and maybe do those works next year. And then looking at table 3, also starting on page 43, the biggest amount in there which I'll highlight is the fitness equipment at teaching and voice to leisure centres. As that was agreed by full council, I think you're hopefully aware of what all that's in relation to. Have to take any other questions on any other tables or anything else in the report, but that's what I can summarise for you.
Sorry.
Sorry, it's just really an accounting thing. I should probably know the answer to this. But when you spend, like in the fitness equipment, Hitchin Royston Leisure Centre, so when you spend capital, the repayment that's made, is that comes back as resource? Or does it come back into the capital budget in terms of profit? Or does it go back into the resource budget?
In this case, because we are essentially, we are buying the capital, and under the terms of the lease, it would always have been our capital. The 520 spend will be counted as capital. And essentially sort of giving a loan to the leisure centre.
But what pot does it go back into is my question.
Just checking how we've got that for it.
It's not particularly important, but I just wondered if it was a clever way of moving money between capital and resource.
I was with friends at the end, they would have a word for that. I think we're going to treat it as capital receipt.
Capital receipt.
It won't reduce the income from Stevens Leisure then. And part of that agreement with them.
I thought the aim was to put this came back as revenue as well, was my vague understanding of what we discussed at the council meeting, but maybe I lost the plot on that one.
It's certainly not an attempt to try and swap capital for revenue. That's not what we're trying to do with it.
Perhaps we should.
Yeah, well, I was thinking the same thing myself. We should do that.
Yeah, perhaps a different regime, you see. Okay, if you can clarify, just confirm that, please, to us. We appreciate it.
We'll do, yeah.
a genuine question, and obviously some lack of understanding. Questions, comments?
Just probably be good, but I'm happy for that to be sort of detailed sort of separately, just to know what the what are the Section 106 projects for which funds have been released. I'm happy for that could be picked up separately.
Yeah, we'll write a separate list of all those.
Don't we get that every year anyway?
We do.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a specific entry here, so it'd be good to know what that... Obviously, it would change.
Any other questions, comments? I thought we could note here some of the significant investment in Hitchin, which seems to be contrary to what some people believe and some people go public with, but certainly my experience of capital programmes or the North Arts District Council.
You don't refer to the MP, really.
And I have been doing it, I say, for many, many years. It has been a regular occurrence that one town in particular, a town, not a city, I might add, has had its more than lion's share of capital investment into community facilities, but perhaps somebody reads numbers differently to what I do. Perhaps I'm more skilled at that. I don't know. So, any other questions, comments? Thank you for that. We'll now move on to, I guess, it must be item number 10, which is Treasury Management.
Thank you, Chair. Not a lot to say on this, really. So our forecast income from our investments has dropped slightly down to 320,000 for the year of our forecast. As you note from the report and you know from the news, interest rates, Bank of England base rate has increased slightly, but that was really expected by the market in general to happen at some point fairly soon, and therefore we're not expecting a significant increase in the interest we can earn. And at the moment, with our capital spend as it is, our balances are declining, and therefore within our forecast we are assuming that we will get decreasing interest as those balances decline. And also for the short term, to get reasonable rates, we are tending to invest longer term, so up to a year and even beyond, and therefore until those investments become back to us, we won't have a chance to sort of take advantage of any potential increase in rates, which I don't think will happen anyway. That's what I want to highlight. I'm happy to take any questions either on the report or the appendix.
Just for me first, you can confirm that we're not investing overseas.
We are not investing overseas, no. All in.
Questions, comments, colleagues? I think as it, quarter two seems to be sort of the mid-term period, quarter four is probably the most interesting one, but quarter three can be as well, but quarter two tends to be the report team, which is yeah type, so understand why it's not generating shadows of enthusiasm, but lots of enthusiasm. So thank you for that. We will let the cover hands of Cabinet. Moving on to item number 11, which is update on the final financial regs, page 79. Again, this must be you, Ian.
Thank you, Chair. As Chief Finance Officer, required to do a regular update and keep an eye on the financial regulations to make sure they're still fit for purpose. One of the principal reasons for bringing these changes to you is that with Norma's departure in the financial regulations, there were a huge number of references to the post of Strategic Director for Finance Policy and Governance. So obviously right that is updated. Also at the same time, I want to try and propose to try and change, make it a little future-proofed. So part of the change is to now call that post Chief Finance Officer, which is a statutory post, and therefore any changes to that post mean that now I don't have to update regulations for it, should it happen. Also, the old regulations were in excess of 60 pages, and they were based on a sort of SIPA best practice from around about the year 2000. Things have moved on, and certainly my view is that the shorter regulations are, the more chances people read them, and therefore the more chance they'll comply with them. So I took the opportunity to make them a bit shorter, so they're now over 30 pages still, but still a bit shorter. Which is why I've not got a track changes version. Usually I provide a track changes version of any of these changes, but it would just show such a mess of everything moving everywhere, I don't think it's worth it. So that's why it's got one clean version, which is why in section 8 I have taken you through the main changes that have been made to the regulations. In general, there have been no changes to the actual rules, aside from a few that are mentioned in those paragraphs. So in 8.5, it talks about reporting of variances both to you and therefore onto Cabinet. And the previous requirement was that it was the greater of 5% of budget or 25,000. We've got quite a lot of small budgets around because of the way they're managed, and it makes sense to have small budgets in those areas. And under that requirement, we've had to report quite a lot of stuff to you, which I don't think is a good use of your time or of Cabinet's. So the proposal in here is that that is changed to it being greater than 5% and 25,000. As I've highlighted in that paragraph 8.5 on page 81, that does lead to a slightly odd situation where for a large budget, we wouldn't report anything to you until it kind of got to quite a big number. So the example there is 5% of a £4 million budget is 200,000. Now obviously, but in the regulations, there is a sort of an additional point that where the Chief Balance Officer, i.e. me, feels that I should be reporting variances to both you and Cabinet, and I still would do so. You might want to consider just making it a straight 25,000. That would also be another option for the presentation of that. So any variance above 25,000 has to be reported, rather than requiring that use of the discretionary power of the Chief Balance Officer. The other kind of bigger change is in paragraph 8.6, and it's 3.8 of the regulations. And that relates to the timing of reporting. So as you're aware from what you've heard quite a few times now, the requirement to sign off the accounts is now by the end of July. And therefore, we will bring the September meeting of FAR proposed to bring that forward into July to allow it to happen. Rather than having yet another meeting, which would be probably much more than is constitutionally allowed for, the proposal is that we try and will do the quarter one monitor to the July meeting. Now, in terms of timing, that's very tight, so it might be we have to sort of start work on it a bit before the end of June, so it won't be the full first quarter, but it'll be most of it, and we'll still update it for any major changes that have happened towards the end of that quarter anyway. So just to highlight, it's not a full report quarter one, it's kind of the first two periods plus known adjustments. But I think that's kind of a practical way around in some ways, the problem that having to start the accounts early causes in terms of meetings both of FAR and of Cabinet. And then paragraphs 8.7, 8.8 and 8.9 of the reports are kind of much more minor changes that still are actual changes to the actual regulations themselves. So I hope that covers the logic and some of the major changes to the finance regulations. Happy to take any questions or comments on those proposals.
Thoughts, comments, John?
So this is your little project by the sounds of it.
It's what I'm required to do, so I had to update it.
Might have even volunteered. Well done anyway. Not sure if it's in here. I have scanned through it. I haven't read it word for word. Where does the responsibility lie and how is it applied for finding suppliers who don't go bust?
That would fall under the contract procurement rules, which are a separate document by finance regulations.
Thoughts, comments? Simon.
Thank you. I learned a new word this evening. I've never heard of vehemence before, so that's a good education. I like to learn something every day. 2 points. What is on page 31, page 113 of the pack, on the peacetime civil major incidents and business continuity sort of planning aspect of this. If I thought about it, I would have, of course, assumed that we did have a continuity plan or a major incident plan, and I think back to Grenville and what actually occurred there. Would it be within the rule? I would personally be very interested to see what the council's major incident plan is, and I tend to find doing this thing for a professional living that it's sometimes sensible to review it in advance of the major incident happening. Most places tend to review it after the incident has happened. Would it be within the remit of finance audit and risk to look at that, or is that out with the responsibility of this committee?
I've seen it.
Have you?
I can't remember what committee
I've never seen it before.
I certainly... I did not pick it up.
It might have been on induction, actually.
The finance portfolio holder, unless it was under emergency... Certainly IT emergencies, but generally it certainly did come under the remit of the finance portfolio holder.
I wouldn't want to find us, and I know we won't, because we'll have reviewed it, but I wouldn't want to find ourselves in a position where we have a major incident and we haven't looked at the plan.
So there is somebody, the guy, Marshall was his name? What's his name? Retired.
Derek Wooden, as well.
Was it Derek Wooden?
It's now Brian Simmons.
Derek Wooden, I know certainly, was the emergency planning king.
Is it a weighty tour?
And he developed it, which we had all seen.
It is somewhere. We did have a major incident after North Arts was flooded about 7 years ago.
Well, would it be sensible to just, even as a note, just to have a look at it? Is that something that, or not? No? Okay, I'm not...
I share your concerns, and I'll leave it in the capable hands. I think I'm not terribly sure it falls under FAR, but certainly it's a risk somewhere, and it should be in there somewhere.
And just the last question was then just really actually quickly flicking over the page to page 32 about payments to officers and councillors. And it looks fine, but you've basically got two full pages there about payments to officers. And as far as I can sort of see, it just says that the payments to councillors is as per the scheme adopted by full council. Yeah. Now, I'm sort of relatively happy with that. But does that need some sort of reference, or is that just you've got to literally trawl back through the minutes of every year to find out that, or is that a standard item? Because that changes every year, doesn't it, as we vote.
Yeah.
So is that really sufficient just to say, as per full council?
I mean, I think the full scheme does go before full council each time, so you would go back to the most recent one that was approved.
Right, okay,
but perhaps put reference in there if that would help.
No, I'm just wondering whether it is actually in terms of an enduring document, whether that's such a brief statement is actually sufficient. If you believe it is, that's absolutely fine.
Well, any thoughts, comments, questions? Are we content to take this back to full council? Thank you very much. I will say, which council does it go to?
We're going to take it to January. It's a bit too soon to take it to the one this week.
I thought it might be a rush. Trying to get used to it.
January, the plan's taken to.
There's no urgency. I've got the question down there, Jan. Thank you. The next thing we have is future meetings, possible agendas. We have the standard set agenda here for the December the 18th meeting, I guess that is, which is the SIAS update on progress against the 17-18 audit plan, risk management update, the budget, and again, same item as this report. That's what's going to come up on the next one. I think the budget's going to take up some of our time as well, so it might well be not much more on that, and I guess that it will... I'm not terribly sure how much we get involved in it, but certainly be a big document we look at. Kay, thank you for your contribution. I could have offered you to leave, but I know you enjoy these so much doing that. And thank you, Claire, for standing in. We do appreciate that. Any other comments, questions? Content? Thank you, colleagues at 10 past.
Got to that.